Welcome back to the Spinner Rack, all you new you maniacs. Here at Season 4 of the Marvel New Universe Comics Podcast, the voice of the new universe. We're your hosts.
Andy, with the star brand number 15. Almost forgot the "the." And
Steven, with a backup story. The backup story, we'll call it. In 1986... the new universe was launched as an imprint from Marvel Comics, dedicated to a more grounded and less fantastic approach to comics and world building. The original idea was the world outside your window, with real-time progress and greater realism. After the first year, some books were canceled, although we're seeing their characters in other places, and the remaining books have gotten consistent creative teams, their origins were streamlined, and they are becoming more action-oriented as the new universe becomes increasingly militarized in the wake of the world-shaking disaster, The Pit. Since then, we have seen the U.S. government drafting paranormals and possibly gearing up for a war. With our podcast, you can follow along with us each week as we go through each comic in the order they hit the spinner rack. Or just check out individual comics if you already have a favorite. We have a Season 4 trivia challenge, definitely now available on our website, www.kickersinc.com. And as long as you're surfing the web, surf on over to X, where you can find at Kickers Inc. and be updated semi-frequently about when our podcast is coming out.
I would say that trivia challenge is like a hidden gem, though, because like based on our numbers of our participants, you're like at worst 50% chance of winning.
What, we have a prize for that, right?
Something, yeah.
Sure. Okay. This week, we get back to bi-monthly former flagship, the Star Brand. Ken Connell, the original bearer of the Star Brand, becomes defocused as the story moves on to other people who take up the mantle of the most powerful weapon in the universe
for some reason. The solicitation for this honestly sounds like last issue, but here it is anyway. The Star Brand number 15, Ken Connell, the first human to possess the Star Brand,
old man,
confronts his son, and the reunion is not happy. Written and penciled by John Byrne, inked by Tom Palmer.
Yeah,
not really the story we're doing today. But.
No, that I double checked. That is not the same solicit as for 14, and yet it's not what we're doing in this issue. So
yeah,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
We will also be running up into a backup story as our bonus feature for this issue.
Right. It's got one of my favorite paranormals that we haven't seen in a long time, too. So I'm excited about that one.
Awesome.
I won't spoil it, I guess, though. I mean, people might already know, but keep it a mild secret. But yeah, Star Brand 15, cover September 1988, though likely came out June 21st, 1988. And yeah, the cover itself is a big blob of green stuff, right? So we've got a nice title.
You're going to have to trim that bush behind the house. I've been asking you 100 times.
It's killed 3 gardeners. we got Space Baby floating on the cover with a tactfully covering scarf of some kind. Space Baby also has got a bit more of a mullet going on. So the passage of time goes on with Space Baby's hair. We get Pit Plague, and yeah, it's basically just like a big mass of green plant stuff. You know, it's like if Poison Ivy was attacking, right? This is kind of what it would look like, I guess.
It took me a while to notice the down the very bottom of it is what I assume to be like suburbs houses.
Yeah,
it's kind of, like
it's all grayed out, so it looks like a Borg ship or something.
Yeah, it's just like he's over some grid. Oh, those are streets. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's meant to be huge and pit plague in a creepy style.
Right. And honestly, with the two month gap, I struggle to remember what happened. Like, it's just a little bit too long to go in between comics. But yeah, I mean, all of the characters we know and love are dead, except for Ken Connell, who's crazy. We've got Duck gave birth and then died to make this space baby thing, which has the Star Brand power, which is now infinite power and also can do whatever you want, right? So it is the new Star Brand is whosoever wields its power can do virtually anything. The only limitation to its use is the imagination and courage of its wielder, right? So.
And like most tattoos, it's transmissible through sexual
right. Sort of.
Passed on from generation to generation as what is that, Lamarckism in biology?
Anyway. That's a great question. I teach chemistry.
Oh, okay. I just know some biologists. I will go.
I guess, yeah. But yeah, the star baby, which is what it says in here, though I like calling it space baby, confronted Ken and gave him the, what was it called again?
Hobson's choice.
Hobson's choice, right? You either be cease to exist or you're gonna be, go crazy. And then they kind of left it. They just kind of, it's like, okay, then we moved on or something. But anyway. So yeah, we're picking up back at the pit. So when you open the book,
I'm sorry, we should say that Maddie's friends Roger and what's her name, Jane, argued with the space baby. Roger was killed, and the space baby, after you know, went away and came back and tried to raise him back to life and perfect him. Apparently.
Right, that's right. Those characters are so interesting. I didn't remember them.
Are they our central characters now?
I'm not really sure if we have a central character. Maybe it's this weird brown thing on the front first page. I could get behind weird brown thing. I don't know how to describe this thing, but like we got a big splash page as if you're looking through binoculars. It says, "Let there be life." It's like a large melted ET. I don't know.
It does. Those big eyes are kind of ET like. I was thinking Man Thing.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's got that like swamp monster sort of look to it. But
thank you.
Yeah.
I think maybe you have like the Rancor monster from Star Wars covered in chocolate sauce.
So. I'll go with that.
But he's got like big anime eyes and he just looks sad.
Yeah, I mean, I was honestly expecting like a twist, like he's just, yeah, sad or something.
Or it's a person in there or something. Yeah. I don't know. We're never gonna know, honestly. We may never know. But yeah, so we turn the page.
Well, let there be life is from Genesis, the Bible. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I feel like somebody else might have said it too.
Yeah, you know, Frankenstein, maybe.
Yeah, there you go. It's alive as Frankenstein, though. Yeah. All right. So we cut to the people viewing this weird chocolate monster. It's some army guys in like protective hazmat suits with a whole bunch of gear and the binoculars. And one guy's like, "Man, oh man, that's an ugly one. Give me the gun." And I like this guy. Like, no, wait a minute, we're supposed to get pictures. PITCHERS, pictures. Not pictures, pictures. Let me take a couple of shots.
I'm supposed to draw this with my notebook. You got me some of them drawing pencils? Oh, okay.
Get the daguerreotype ready. like, hurry up, we're too close to the pit. He's like, keep your pants on, this won't take. Oh, crud. It spotted us. So I don't know that we get an impression how fast this thing is, but it kind of turns and starts lumbering towards them. And he's like, okay, gonna have to settle for pitchers of pieces of this one. I'm gonna try me out this new toy. So he gets out like a bazooka or a rocket launcher. It just looks like a G.I. Joe weapon. But the thing keeps lumbering closer to them and he hasn't fired. Like, what are you waiting for? He's like, I can't keep my balance. The ground keeps shifting. And all of a sudden all these green vines kind of come out of the ground, and then we cut to like the bunker with Mac Browning and some other random army guys, and you hear the scream, like, because it's they're listening to the recording of what happens. Like, yeah. So
Everyone's horrified.
again, like the chocolate monster thing might have been friendly, right? It's just the vines that killed those guys.
He was coming over to warn him about the vines. Guys, get away from the vines. And they were going to shoot him.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a lot of video games will let you take a bazooka out at some point, and that's about how these guys looked with, like, hey, there's a thing that's moving. Let's go try out our new toy. Okay, guys.
Yeah. So the army guy's like, that makes 15 times you've listened to it, Colonel Browning. It doesn't get any better. He's like, no, these men were in Sector 58, you said. Like, so Mac Browning's having a hard time with non-civilians dying, and he just can't quite grasp that.
I'm not sure. I mean, there's another half dozen guys in that room who are like having to listen to this again and again and
Play it
again.
again. Like, it's just the same people dying again. Like, play it
Wrong with you?
again. Oh, he's gonna go back to his room and beat his wife or something. I don't know. Anyway, and he gets all weird and poetic. He's like, everything is significant, Major. There's not a snowflake falls over the pit that we don't find some way to measure. It's like, what do you think you're gonna learn from all this? It's like, maybe nothing, maybe everything. The world has never had to deal with anything like this before. Nothing in human history has come close to what happened in Pittsburgh. Not Krakatoa, not Hiroshima and Nagasaki, maybe not even Sodom and Gomorrah. But if he says maybe, then I feel like he's leaving it open that something is perhaps come close to this.
I like to think that he's a Holocaust denialist, but that's just me.
I don't know, that might make him, there's an awful lot of civilians dying. That might be like his ultimate win.
Krakatoa?
Was that the colony that disappeared?
No, that's it's a volcano that went off in like Indonesia, late 1800s, I want to say.
Yeah.
It was like the whole world was like, oh, there's ash covered in the sky. Everything's dark now.
Gotcha. All right. So let's see. Yeah, he kind of continues talking, talking about how all of the different men haven't had a break. And we cut to Buff Roger, right? So this is the Rogers come back to life, in underpants, possibly two times the size of a human, or possibly he's just standing in the foreground.
I'll go with that one.
Yeah. He's like, you try walking on a treadmill for 3 days straight and see how you feel, doctor. It's like, has he really been walking on a treadmill for 3 days straight, or is he exaggerating here? I'm like, it's just a couple more tests and we'll let you see your wife. Jeez. And it's like, what tests? Like, what possible tests can we do? This man was dead as they come. And the woman doctor is like, I know, I did the autopsy, and even when he was alive, he wasn't Superman. Something got to him. After he was dead, after the postmortem, and put him back together. So it's definitely like some 6 million, what is it, $1 million man?
Yeah.
Question now is, what was it? Which of course segues to a flying Starbrand shaped looking comet thing coming through the sky, which we can only assume is Space Baby. Then we turn the page, and it is now with nice long wavy blonde hair.
I'm a little I was a little surprised that the scarf or what, whatever it is that's covering him was continued. I kind of thought it was just like a you had to put it on the cover, but like inside, they would just sort of be facing the wrong way or something.
Right,
But
yeah, and
he's wearing something.
if he's thoughtful enough to cover himself, I mean, infinite power that can do anything, he could make Starbrand pants, right? I don't know. Anyway, so the space baby flies up to the pit, sensing something alive, something in pain inside the pit. So this is all sort of self-narration, what Space Baby's thinking. I think it's got to be careful. Never been inside the crater before. What lies within may be too much, even for my power to resist. So we get this nice scene of it kind of like flying down into the crater. says the cloud cover is a constant curtain. Something is causing the substance at the bottom of the pit to boil. I will need senses other than sight to find my way here. So we've had references to pit juice before as this sort of toxic mutagenic sort of substance that's, you know, messed up Jenny Swenson and possibly causing other mutations. We assume like that, you know, brown monster from before. But here he kind of describes it. You know, once it was a unique material, but now it's been mixing with waters flowing from the two rivers which once met at Pittsburgh.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'd read crunching some numbers to see if there was like the if it wasn't boiling, like would the pit fill up in, you know, some reasonable time frame? And as near as I could tell from like how big they make it, it would take like 100 years or something, so
yeah, okay,
nothing's going to fill it up anytime soon.
Gotcha. But so yeah, we get like this like purple smoke and like green bubbling liquid, and the baby sort of like dives down into it with like a protective force field. Again, Starbrand can do anything, I guess. And it's basically saying like it's having a hard time figuring out where this life is coming from, and like it seems like it's coming from all around. Baby's floating in the juice. This place is madness made real.
He's got like a, yeah, so like a bubble around him.
Yeah,
so
and like the Green Lantern thing.
Yeah, yeah.
When he goes through space. Yeah, we get some weird. He's like talking about how he compelled his mother to study so that he could learn and gain some comprehension of the world, but like nothing can relate to this. And apparently like all the stuff floating around in the pit juice, there's like people, there's dogs, there's a bookshelf where the books have somehow magically stayed on it, in a car, and like everything seems preserved for some reason. So like the people aren't decomposing.
That's to me the like, yeah, strangest thing they've come up with this part yet. I mean,
yeah,
this wasn't the stuff that was inside the pit. This was the stuff that was around it, and then like the vortex that like Justice was fighting,
right?
Sucked all everything within a few miles in, and we find, yeah, perfectly preserved all these corpses and stuff.
Yeah,
what the heck?
I wonder if we'll ever get an explanation. Just no idea. But he finds like down to the bottom, there's like cracks on the floor, right? So initially this was like a smooth cut away, you know, of whatever, until Dave Landers started punching holes in it or whatever. But yeah, there's like cracks and there's some material coming out of it, right? So he's talking about volcanic, but it looks like it's rather alive. And it looks kind of like the vines from earlier too. We cut to a couple of guys in a helicopter flying above the pit, and again looking at these green vines sort of crawling out of the edge. Like the whole pit is alive with these crazy green vines. He's like, I can only guess at what this is. There's nothing in my textbooks to cover this, but as you can plainly see, it's moving, spreading out from beyond the rim to the crater. So like imagine like all these vines, like fingers coming out of the edge. And then I don't know if it's a result of these guys not being terribly careful, but yeah, they come armed with defoliant. So he's got like maybe one spray canister.
Let's point out it's Mac Browning and some doctor or
that's
scientist.
True.
So
Repinant, something in there. But yeah.
Yeah.
Browning.
You can barely make it out.
Yeah.
Browning is like, I'm not sure if I should be traveling by helicopter. These things get shot down all the time. I don't know.
It's right. Some rogue operatives. So like I like this. Let's see what this fancy new defoliant can do against this super spinach. I kind of want to call it super spinach from now on. So they spray the defoliant on it, and then it starts shrieking at them. to the point where they have to cover their ears, and then the vines rise up and like they're firing at them, And eventually, the vines win, right? So, like, even if they're shooting through it, it keeps rising up and kind of grabs onto the helicopter, pulling it down. I think I've seen this G.I. Joe episode, actually. So, it's been done
Yeah, no,
before.
I don't want to say Browning's first answer to everything is get the guns out and start blasting away, but
Well, this time his first instinct was to get the chemical defoliant, right?
I miss that Agent Orange. It was the best stuff we ever had.
What do they think one helicopter was going to do against like this thing that was everywhere?
I mean, I th it's a little, yeah. Like, did they just fly too low? Like,
Yeah.
again, let's get a better look at this. Too close. Maybe.
Maybe send out like a tank truck, a tanker truck with this stuff and kind of spray it around and see what happens, see if it even works before you send the guy in charge in the helicopter. But anyway.
We're not, tacticians,
Yeah.
military geniuses.
And then we get a weird interlude with Mr. Burnley, which I'll say in quotes because this is clearly Wilford Brimley.
What's that you say? Wilford Burnley? Yes, close enough. Thanks, Doc. It's a great little interlude in a hospital with a doctor. We find that Burnley's grandson is dying of terminal illness. It is not Tad Selby.
No.
Don't even ask.
And that's it.
Although I do enjoy that the doctor was like, Burnley's saying, well, the kid was from Pittsburgh and his mom and pa are dead, and I'm the only, we're all we got left. And the doctor starts going off on, yeah, I had a cousin in Pittsburgh. We were never very close. But anyway, you don't need to hear about me. Why do you even bring that up? I don't.
I don't know. Why is this page even in the book?
Oh, I remember enough of this to say Wilford Burnley start first appearance Starbrand 15 bag and board it. I don't know.
Oh God. It was like when like Don Rickles was in the DC like New Gods books for some reason. In like a Jimmy Olsen or something, and he had like a twin. And it's like, why is this here? Why does this exist? Because Jack Kirby. This is another sort of odd one. I mean, it's a new universe though. It could have just been actual Wilford Brimley, right? Because that's a real person in this universe, right? So,
Why not? Why
anyway,
not?
so the vines are angry now. So we get elsewhere, a town nearby. So like not that hadn't been destroyed by the pit disaster, but close enough to be threatened. So it's kind of like the background, this giant wall of plant vine stuff, attacking, rolling towards this town. Like, what is this thing? It's filling the whole sky. So they spend a few minutes explaining how far away they are and how unbelievable it is while they're running away. Thankfully, Space Baby comes to the rescue here. It's like, this is the life form. No wonder I could not isolate its position. It's everywhere, all around the fused walls of the pit, millions of cubic yards of living matter, all the same creature. And yet it moves and seems almost to do so deliberately. I sense no intelligence in this thing, only pain and destruction. Okay. So
I
yeah,
like
the
where we see sometimes we get that sort of hologram of the baby's head, but usually when he's flying around, you see the Star Brand just by itself kind of flying around.
yeah.
And then it kind of goes like it's facing opposite directions if it's like going away from you, you know what I mean? So
Right.
it's interesting visual.
Yeah, it's just kind of like zipping around like a comet, to a degree. But maybe he got tired of drawing the scarf covering the naked baby parts. I don't know. Like that could be
What do
legit.
you mean I can't draw naked babies in your comic book? Haven't you been to Rome? They're all over this Renaissance art.
Funny.
Prude.
So, Naked Star Baby's, thinking perhaps it can control it. It says this creature was created when my father unleashed the power of the Star Brand. So he's kind of does something vague and causes it to retreat. It makes a flash. I don't know. It's confusing. And then like so the giant mass of tangled vines starts retreating back towards the pit. In doing so, uncovers the helicopter it pulled down with Mac Browning, who of course survives. Maybe along with the doctor. It's kind of hard to tell. But
the, only the good die young.
They're not wearing the same outfits as before, that's for sure. But yeah, the pilot died, so nice going, Mac Browning. Another non-civilian death to weigh you down. So Browning gets a look at the star baby, the space baby, as it flies off, and it's still trying to sort of control this thing. It's like, before I'm done, I'm going to get to know it on a first name basis. The edge of the pit is near. The creature is beginning to resist my pressure on it. It does not want to completely withdraw. It's like, yet if I'm to prevent it from causing any further damage or loss of life, I must compel it back to within its original perimeter. I must utilize the full extent of my power. So you'll get the star arms out pose, big flash of energy, and then we go like zoom back into planetary scale. Basically like a big red orb of energy about the size of the pit. Kind of like a giant force field, I suppose. It says, I must contain the power to the pit itself. And yeah, again, like you, just a big giant bubble. The vines start kind of climbing up the edges of it on the inside, you know, kind of like the inside of the snow globe piece. But then start dying. So he's like, oh no, the pit creature is dying, shriveling away faster than I'm able to absorb its life pattern. So it's like reading its DNA or something. I don't know what it's doing. I don't like these vague powers. It's like all around the circumference of the pit, every tendril of the organism is blackened, dried, dead, all dead. And I do not know why or how. And then we get a particularly football shaped head space baby version here. It's like, I cannot believe it was due to my actions, and yet what other choice do I have? My carelessness may have contributed to the destruction of a creature unique on Earth. I must not allow such a thing to occur again. And yet, if I am to guard against this as never before, blah 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 blah, power something something. So space baby is sad that he killed the giant monster thing.
He's going to use his power as he never has before, as none who has ever wielded the power has dared use it. Right. Come back next 60 days. Let's see how he does that.
So, yeah.
The heck?
Thanks. I was getting tired of the space baby.
We could redo it in the Trump or Duck voice. If you,
it does kind of work in like Trumpian, like no one has ever dared to use his power quite like I have. You know, it's more Christopher Walken again. I don't have a good Trump voice, but yeah, it's like, I'm the best that ever was at using the Star Brand power. All these other idiots could never use.
I saw another guy power. Using the Star Brand power. I don't want to talk about it. He wasn't that good.
Two fun-filled pages to go. Elsewhere again. So we get Ken Connell on his bike, right? Call back to the first issue. He's got a scarf blowing in the wind, thankfully not covering up his naked body. He's wearing clothes. And he's Hobson's choice. Hobson's choice, he called it. Lose the power or die. What a choice. So he actually sounded...
New obscure reference for you. That's the matter.
He sounds a little Trumpian too. He's like, what a choice. Lose the power or die. So I said, take it. I said, take the power. So he took it, the fool. The fool, I guess he didn't realize. I knew what he was doing. I knew what I was saying. I'm the smartest and the best. So as long as I'm still alive, I can get the power back, and I will get it back. I will. So he's drinking and motorcycling on the edge of a cliff, which I don't think is the pit.
No,
right?
Just, no, I'm sure it's not.
He's blazing along, chucks his bottle, and then, oh my gosh, like I did not think Ghost Myron was going to come back, but Ghost Myron comes back. No, can you won't.
Myron.
He turns and then flies off the edge of the cliff and explodes. Because, sure, why not? Oh, Ghost Myron kills Ken Connell, who maybe doesn't have the Starbrand power anymore, but maybe he still does. I don't really know. Next issue, Death, Where Is Thy Sting? Thy Sting took place 2 issues ago when you killed Duck.
And that's from the Apostle Paul, maybe Book of Romans, something like that.
Oh, okay. That was at the tip of my tongue.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's so
one
that's
end
it.
Of the Bible. Oh, First Corinthians, sorry. One end of the Bible to the other. So
only 22 pages.
Yeah, I don't know. This was so like fast to read through. I think we've set a record for ourselves for covering it. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Much as just now, when I read this the other day, I could not stop laughing.
it's better, but like for waiting for 2 months, like what did we get? You know, like nothing.
It is better in the sense of being inoffensive. I'm not like you're just grinding axes all over the place. It's people aren't necessarily treated better, but I mean it's kind of half of a story. You know, something happens and something resolves it, even though you're not really clear on who these characters are half the time. And yeah, you probably would have forgotten in 2 months if you weren't us.
Yeah. Do we know what Byrne was still working on at this time? Like, or other books? Like, was he just kind of phoning this one in? Or
yeah, I'd have to look it up. Like, Marvel Age, I know, has like a interview with him around this time where he's talking about maybe She-Hulk, West Coast Avengers. I don't think he's started Namor yet. There might be another one though. But yeah, he is. I mean, it's weird in that, yeah, he's not like, I got to get back on the X-Men or I got to take over Alpha Flight again or any of that stuff. He's just, yeah, whatever. That's my sense of like his output at this time.
Yeah. So,
I mean, the others, I think he cared about more. In that interview, it was like maybe one paragraph of like one question about Starbrand out of 20. So that's probably
yeah. I was definitely kind of expecting something to move forward, right? Like learn a little bit more about Pit Juice, but we don't really, you know, like, and maybe learn something about these creatures that are popping up, like mostly in this issue in Starbrand. I mean, but we don't really get any. We don't really learn anything about them other than they're still around, and then like a page or two of Roger exercising and Wilfred Brimley and his kid, and then like Ken just randomly dies at the end.
It's, oh my goodness. I think it's so I mean, we'd asked ourselves before, who's the main character now? And there really isn't one.
Right. I mean, it's gotta be Space Baby, right? But it's just like
Space Baby's been like his third issue and he still doesn't even have a name. What's up with that? You know?
Right.
I think, you know, so defocused, it turns out, is actually a good description of this, in that it's like, it's more like, you know, you have like there's I don't know, novels, but that are either like, they're not a novel, they're a bunch of short stories, but they're also set in the same town or something.
Right.
So they have some connection. And that's kind of how this feels. You're sort of zipping from one thing to another, and you're kind of getting an idea of like a large scale problem and various people that could have, you know, fight it or help it or whatever, which is, I guess, kind of like what I would have expected the pit itself, the book, to be like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. He's like, he's set it up with, you know, like I say, we say killed all the people we liked, and gives us this sort of random, like, spin the bottle here. Now it's over here, you know, spin again.
Yeah.
Pull the lever. Some
interesting stuff you could kind of do with it, right? Like, what if all of the dead people in the pits, like, consciousness is trapped in the vines, and then, you know, but there's so many people conflicting that can't really, you know, create an intelligence. So it's just kind of like trying to get out, trying to go back home, but accidentally destroying everything along the way. And then, you know, and then star space babies, like, accidentally killing it, and like has some impact then, because then, like, he's finally killed all these people. Whereas if he realized what was going on, maybe he could put them back together or something. I don't know. Give me something.
Yeah, I mean, we're all kind of used to comic book. I mean, if bodies are perfectly preserved, we expect them to, like, be back to life again. I mean, yeah, he put Roger back to life.
Yeah, what's waste. The difference? Why couldn't you bring Chuck back?
I mean, all these things seem so arbitrary if you, like, give it just a second's thought. Yeah, like I said,
the bookshelf floating in the goop with all the books still on it's just gonna bother me though.
So like the very beginning, I thought maybe we'd have like a sympathetic monster or something, some little twist there. Browning, I mean, I'm okay with Browning being, you know, this being a kind of a go-to book for him to appear in.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Rogers. Well, you see how you like walking on a treadmill for 3 days, Mr. Doctor, Mister. I'm going to keep doing that every time he appears. You know, the baby is frustrating because it's not really much of a character at all.
Yeah, and there's nothing worse than vague, unexplained powers that can do anything, right? Like, give me some kind of rules, some kind of limits.
Yeah. The twisted life form around the pit is a good, I like that idea, you know what I mean? Right. Execution's kind of meh, but yeah, I got several. It's kind of like Ego, the Living Planet. The Gaia hypothesis is, you know, sort of a more real scientific version of that. Day of the Triffids, you know, attacked by giant plants. There's also a Doctor Who from the Tom Baker era where there were like giant plant attacks. I think it was Seeds of Doom. Anyway. But yeah, the Space Baby still seems like one of those original Star Trek adversaries. That's this like godlike being, except it's crazy, or it's
it's a child and it hasn't learned and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, okay, that's not a real exciting story anymore. So if it's but I don't know. There's something about sort of bouncing through all these, you know, pieces of a story that kind of is like, okay, this is at least, you know, I'm not mad at it like I might have been last issue. So yeah. Okay,
that definitely would work better in a monthly book, not a bi-monthly though. It's like, you know, just having to pick up on all those trails after such a long period of time is tougher. So.
Yeah, I mean, when your whole premise is real-time progress, but you're only appearing every 2 months, feels like the world can change a lot every time a new issue hits the stands.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's winter in here. It doesn't give a date, but I don't know if it's like nuclear winter, you know what I mean?
Right. Because like, it should be like June, right?
Yeah. What's going on? I don't know. So,
Burn doesn't care.
But yeah, I also did not expect to see Myron back again. I mean, after last issue where Ken was like a crazy rapist or something, it was like, well, if Myron's not going to stop him doing that.
Right. Yeah. Like, what good are you, Myron?
I guess Myron's fine with rape. I don't know. And holding people hostage for like, I don't know. I mean, again, I don't want to like overdo like some of our implication. Some of the implications maybe have not been intended, so I don't want to get too carried away. But that's the best I can do with this. I don't know, inoffensive. So I give it neither Nukin nor the pits.
I would. I like the binary choice, right? It's got to be one or the other. So I'd say the pits.
Grading. If I'm forced to say C-. It, then I will say the pits and B minus. Yeah.
Yeah. I said C minus.
Oh, okay. C plus then.
C plus. That puts a little positive spin on it.
Because it, I mean, if I think about it too much, I will. It's significantly, a lesser effort than the other books that are currently coming out.
It's decidedly okay. It's just, I'm just real worried about the direction. Like I got no excitement or things to look forward to, like in all of the other comics.
Yeah, it's curiosity that keeps me moving forward with this one, I guess.
I don't know. It's more inevitability. Anyway.
Yeah. So,
backup story time.
Yeah, I don't think we need to take a break because we zoomed through that one, relatively speaking.
Right. Flew through it like the space baby across the edge of the pit.
Backup story is Giants in the Earth. And a writer is Eric Siri, Siry, penciler Rod Ramos, and inker Donald Hudson. Rod Ramos is a name that's familiar to me. I'm sorry, I didn't look him back up again. I think I did look up Eric Siri, the writer, and he only did a handful of these sort of stories. So,
okay.
At first I thought, like, is that like a pen name for, like, you know, Howard Mackey didn't want to keep publishing under his name or something? Do not know. Giants in the Earth. We are at the U.S.-Canadian border, and we see someone is checking papers of someone trying to cross the border. It is a American trying to leave America and go into Canada. Everything looks in order, Mr. Sharp, but I'm going to have to check your passport inside before I let you through to Canada. Yeah, fine. Just hurry it up. We have a little U.S. Border Patrol, sort of, I want to say log cabin, but it's just a cabin, I guess.
Yeah.
Inside.
Like a ranger station or something.
Yeah. Inside, it's, just some office, some desks with a couple other guys, and everyone's in like an army uniform. And someone says, "Hi, Rory," and thinks to himself, "What a dopey name." Seems weirdly aggressive for a minor character, but okay. Anyway, the guy comes in and says, "Lieutenant, some guy named Leland Sharp wants to get into Canada. You should see the acne on this guy." Whew! Leland Shark?
Acne?
It's shrapnel!
Exploding psychokinetic pimple popping man. Yes.
Last seen in DP7 issues 2 to 3. Something
yeah,
like
it's been a while, man.
It'd be great if he had like gray hair or like had grown a full beard or something.
Only us.
Only to us. Do you have his registration papers, Ramos? Yeah, here they are. They say he's 4F. So 4F means you are disqualified from the army for like physical disability or something. And the guy tells him, check him under the ultraviolet lamp. Say, Hudson, why do people have to be registered before we let them across the border? It's like we live in some sort of police state. Like, it's like I'm living in Nazi Germany, as Roger Price would say last issue.
This is everybody's first day on the job, like commenting about his name. Like, why do I have to do my job?
What is it we're doing here again? Oh, yeah, that's the border for US and Canada. Canada was a Commonwealth of Britain for a long time, not the United States of America, which is formed by revolution against Britain.
This flat white thing is called paper. It has lines on it that indicate sounds called words.
Lieutenant Hudson continues to keep tabs on people who try to dodge the draft. Sure, that used to be cool in the 60s, but we're in the 80s now. Get with it!
Hmm.
Deportation laws have been recently modified so that Canada is no longer a shelter for dodgers. But, I mean, why the sudden paranoia? The U.S.-Canadian border used to be unpatrolled. It has to be with that Spitfire incident in British Columbia last February, which was reportedly caused by American paranormals. Mm. Oh, there we go. Media control pays off again. Who shot up all these people? Oh, the guy with the psychic mind-reading power. He shot everyone with a, like a super tank weapon?
Nice.
Anyway.
I just took a peep, and the inker Donald Hudson, we have Lieutenant Hudson, I think he drew himself. I think they drew actual Donald Hudson in there.
Oh, wow. I was going to say it was weird to me.
A black man with glasses.
There's a, like, the penciler is Rod Ramos, and the character is Rory Ramos.
Yeah.
And
they make fun of the name.
They make fun of the name. What the heck? interesting. Yeah, maybe these guys are all just themselves plus shrapnel. Interesting.
Thinking.
So, Rory noticed, yo, this guy's papers are fake. Someone else pops up. Paranormals, really? Yeah, like that Brodstvow guy. Man, everyone's getting name checked in this one. There's a whole section on him in this month's Soldier of Fortune, Rory. Shut your trap, Ivy. Is he also? No, Chris Ivy was the inker on the main story, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
What's going on, Deck? And back in the bullpen, someone's really having a fun day. So he says, by the way, I heard some rumors the government might be rounding up paranormals for some reason. And Rory, thinks to himself, that sounds like trouble. Anyway, they say, okay, this guy's got to be a draft dodger. Let's go grab him. They go outside. Is there some sort of problem? As a matter of fact, there is. Leland.
If that is your real name.
They say his papers are forgeries. Crossing an international border with false documentation is a serious offense. Sir, you are under military arrest. And Sharp is thinking to himself, blasted. I had no idea there were border guards between the U.S. and Canada. The agency fired me after the fiasco with the clinic. That's, DP7. And I haven't had a good bounty hunting job in ages. And his old pal Bloodhound, who we saw as Major Zentner over in DP7 again, and the draft, told him what's going on in the army, and he decided to pack up and leave the country. This is all thought balloons from shrapnel while he's being arrested. I don't want trouble, but I can't afford to be arrested, especially by the government, who are really the only people who would do it in the first place. Anyway, man's got to do what a man's got to do. So he explodes. What? The psychoplasmic pimples go at Lieutenant Hudson. And this hurts shrapnel, but it is so damaging to the other person that it gives him a chance to get away. They're like, oh my gosh, this guy's a paranormal. What are we going to do? I'll get that monster. Shrapnel goes around a corner, and then when someone chases him, he opens up his shirt and blows more pimples at the guy. Shrapnel's feeling the pain himself, so he picks up the guy's gun and then like fires off a couple rounds at Hudson and Ramos, who are cowering behind Shrapnel's pickup truck that he'd driven up there in. Right. You'll never get me.
They all got to be thinking like, this is both painful and disgusting.
Of all the things to be attacked by, Pimple Man. So shrapnel actually hits Hudson's hand with his with the gunfire. And was the two guys are still behind the truck. They're trying to yell at him to turn himself in. You know, don't dredge in the draft. Isn't worth getting killed. It's every citizen's duty to serve his country as best he can. You have an obligation to use your superhuman abilities to help. He keeps shooting. Help the army? That's a laugh. They're forming a secret army of paranormals. They're going to start World War III. We'll all die. Yeah, actually,
he might be onto something sharp. There.
Yeah, he seems to be a little more smarter than most of the other characters in the book, I'll tell you.
Sharper, perhaps.
Ooh. Ramos is thinking to himself, secret army. It's true. So Shrapnel has gotten the Ivy, I think, who was close to him. And is now sort of like holding him hostage. So he's staying behind him, holding the gun on him. Got 5 seconds to throw your guns away before I blow his head off. Do as he says, man. I don't want to die. Shoot him, Ramos. That maniac's too dangerous to let go. Ramos thinks to himself, I can't shoot him, but I can't let him go either. So he throws the gun down and comes out with his hands up. And just then he's like, here goes everything. So dirt hands then come out of the ground. Shrapnel's surprised by this. And then a full, like, humanoid figure made out of dirt. It then is coming towards Shrapnel, and he's, like, taken aback. He fires with his gun. The bullets just harmlessly go through dirt. The other guys are like, what? But Ramos is coming closer, and he's kind of mimicking, like, physically what this dirt
golem,
as he calls it, golem is doing. So it's kind of like working by remote control based on his activity. Shrapnel tries blasting him with his open shirt pimple, but it was not enough. Okay, dirt man, let me show you why they call me Shrapnel. Oh, I see that did nothing. Okay. It's not even slowing him down. So Ramos is kind of like pantomiming hitting and like blocking and striking Shrapnel, who is thinking to himself he's not going to let the pile of dirt beat him, but he does, in fact, let the pile of dirt beat him.
Yeah, maybe don't box with a pile of dirt monster.
As Shrapnel's down on the ground, the dirt sort of crumbles away to nothing, and Ramos is thinking to himself, I won, now what? His friend Hudson, amazing, Ramos, just amazing. I had no idea you were a paranormal, too. This is too important to keep a secret, though. I've got to report this to Washington. You'll be in that paranormal army in no time.
Ah, jeez. Should have teamed up with Leland.
Had the dirt monster attack Hudson and Ivy, and we'll all head to Canada. Anyway, in no time, he says, that's what I've been afraid of ever since I found out about my strange ability. I didn't want anyone to know about this. I didn't want to become a scientific oddity, and now a secret army. Wait a second. I've been given a chance to be more than just that. A chance to serve my country the way I told Shrapnel. He should. A chance for the glory of America's elite. All right, Paranormal Army. Get ready for Rory Ramos.
Eesh. And you get hit by like a psychoplasmic,
immediately killed in action.
Propaganda pimple? That's what I was trying to come out. It's like, you know, psychoplasmic propaganda inducing pimple. I don't know.
He'll be on a poster outside every recruiting hall. You be the paranormal that you know your government wants you to be. It's funny now that so these names were all similar. It's like some guys like sitting around the bullpen and like, you know, we need to get more work out of Marvel. How about if we make our own story starring us and one of their minor characters about how one of us is going to be in the paranormal army for this war that's upcoming. That'd be great, right? I don't know. I'm just trying to imagine how this came to be. It's a funny thing, but I'm just guessing this Ramos joins the draft crew in the war eventually.
But we still have never followed up with in really any way, shape, or form at this point.
Yeah, they got very minor, let's call it short shrift in DP7 and Psi-Force last month when they appeared at Fort Benning. But
I'm waiting to hear what happened with the president being a paranormal, like, right?
It's also a good question. It shows up in the universe news, but that's about it for now.
Though I'm very excited to have Leland Sharp back, even if it's just for this backup thing. I'm guessing we won't see him again, but
I would it's unlikely, but I mean, they drafted Pitbull, so it's possible it's like more important to them to have a active paranormal in their army than to like arrest people for shooting police or something. Right. So
it would be cool if they added vice versa to the lady squad for the, what was it, the CIA had then?
right. Yeah, there's, I would have to think about who else is cool. But so, yeah, we still got like new paranormals popping out. That at least is also good, I guess.
Yeah.
And the golem is an interesting, I mean, that's like a Jewish mysticism tradition. So Grimos is, I don't know, Hispanic. So a couple of influences there. I don't know how that all ties together. But it's an interesting power.
Yeah, that's probably not the most useful if he has to like mime everything it does. Like, because you could just run around it and go, like, hit him in the gut, you know? Like,
yeah, he can't
defend
I mean,
himself and control the golem at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, some of the powers are just purely like playback or something, though, or like, okay. Let's see. We have a next issue, the cover of the next issue of Starbrand, which we'd seen before and laughed about how out of character for the new universe it is.
Yes.
It is it's like a I think that's his wife, right? Jane Price.
Hard to tell, but I'm assuming that's who it is.
Yeah. A nice fan service pose from her. Being held by some sort of angry cyborg robot supervillain.
Definitely like Dr. Doom vibes.
Roger is in the Starbrand superhero getup plus the Count Nefaria cape we last saw in Spitfire 13.
Plus 80s future sunglasses.
He's busting through a wall and he's come to do something. I don't know. We get
If Roger dies on his first mission as a superhero, I feel like that might redeem this comic a little bit.
I would love to see Roger on a motorcycle. I'm Since Choice, they called it.
Who's this guy?
What's going
this
on?
Ghost with the glasses that keeps talking to me. I've never heard of this guy.
I'm not the Starbrand, Mr. Myron, Mr. Feldman. Myron. Was it Melvin Feldman? We have an ad for Excalibur, which is starting up soon, the regular full series. So the art is by Alan Davis, which looks really nice. I wasn't as impressed with it back then, but I got to say it's been a real favorite to me over the years since then.
Hmm.
I think the first appearance of Excalibur was like by Art Adams, so you're always like, oh, it's not
Step
Art
down
Adams.
From there. Yeah. Yeah. I remember reading it at the tail end of my like read everything X-Men kick and kind of falling flat, but like I don't know, Claremont going for humor didn't really sit with me.
I can imagine. I don't remember, yeah, staying with it forever. It was kind of a, I guess I'll get this too, kind of a book for me. So
I think maybe like their first issue of that also started as like a continuation of something else. Like there was something, some bit of story somewhere else where I felt like, you know, the first issue, like all these characters all knew each other and I was supposed to know them, but I didn't, you know?
All I know is there was either a prestige format like special, or there was a that's maybe the Art Adams thing.
Yeah,
I'm
maybe
thinking
that's
of
what I missed.
Or then, there was an annual,
right?
That would have, that was like, yeah, where it started, and then the series continued from that point. But I think we see, you know, the sales charts, that's pretty high, so it's one of those like, oh, there you go. It is written by Chris Claremont, though, so he was at least involved. Some of the ones like New Mutants, once he stopped writing it, became, I don't know, maybe
mid.
Yes. Alpha Flight was always like, you know, why? Well, I don't want to get started. We have the ad for the paranormal who can change the world, but not a diaper.
I still have no idea what they're talking about with that one.
And then the Universe News, I believe we've covered as much as we can out of this already.
Just a little Kickers Ink spice that they gave us.
It's enjoyable, but I think the back cover is an ad for Speedball, which is starting up. And according to Legends, Speedball was originally thought of as also being a new universe title. I don't know how long his solo title went on for, but with that, between that and what, the New Warriors,
yeah,
he was a reasonably popular character for a while. So I'm not sure. Yeah, I would like to. I should check that out again. Steve Ditko was doing the early issues, and that's always fun.
Yeah, I like Roger Stern.
Tune in again for our Speedball podcast.
More speed, more balls. I don't know.
That's, I guess that is it for this week's episode. In case you are wondering, this season that we're currently in, season 4, we're planning to go up through the issue number 25. So we're not finishing up just yet. With like one of our season recaps. The next time in the new now universe, we will check in on those lovable, troublemaking teens, the scamps and scalawags, Psyforce number 24.
That was a mouthful. Psyforce 24. Psyforce, who, reminder, is not the name of the team in the comic, breaks into CIA headquarters, and the effort costs one of the team members her life. Oh, geez, spoilers. Tears Hot on Skin Cold, written by Fabian Nicieza, penciled by Mark Bagley. Hey, Mark Bagley, and inked by Mike Witherby. Oh, man.
Yeah, it seems like it will be another difficult one to get through.
There's been too many tough deaths in this new universe. First the Strong Arms, and then Duck, and then now this. Come on.
Yeah, it's a we'll talk about like who we expected or would think would be going next time, since we haven't read it yet. Until then, you can again find us on our website, kickersinc.com. You can always email us at newuniversepodcast@gmail.com. This has been the voice of the new universe, and we will see you back at the spinner rack.
It's your universe, idiot.
It was only supposed to make a buzzing noise.
This place is madness made real.
Hobbs's choice. Hobbs's choice, he called it.